Welcome to TechNet Radio, your guide to the IT universe.
Hi, and welcome back to TechNet Radio. I'm Aurora Queen. We're still talking about Exchange this month, and we like to bring in a customer story for you. So our main guest today is Reed Wilson. He's a global infrastructure architect for a company called NuSkin, and he speaks with Chris Avis about why NuSkin chose Exchange Server over other solutions. Now, we're all really excited here at TechNet Radio because we actually received an email from a listener, and his name is George Olney. And like I always say, we love feedback, right? So I called him up and had a chat with him. And because he enjoyed Kimberly Tripp's interview so much on SQL, we actually brought her on the call as well to chat with our listener. So stay tuned later for that. And then after that conversation, I'll wrap it up with some information on events and webcasts for you. First, here's Chris Avis speaking with Reed Wilson on TechNet Radio.
Well, good day, everyone, and welcome to TechNet Radio. My name is Chris Avis with the Microsoft Across America Today team. Today, I'm speaking with Reed Wilson. He is a global infrastructure architect with NuSkin Enterprises. Good afternoon, Reed, and welcome.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Very good, very good. Thank you for joining with us and taking time out for this interview today. So first things first, I'm going to start off just to give everybody an idea. What is NuSkin Enterprises? What does this company do?
NuSkin Enterprises, we are a global billion-dollar corporation focusing on direct selling. We have a few divisions, one of which is our personal care division. So we sell things like lotions and hair care. We really focus on the anti-aging products. We also have kind of a nutraceuticals pharmaceutical division where we sell vitamins, particularly around antioxidants, that kind of a thing. We even have a patented scanner that will allow you non-invasively, mind you, to get an idea of how your vitamins are working for you and what you might want to beef up on and the types of food you kind of want to eat. And third, we have a division for technology called Big Planet. We do a lot of photo sharing, photo storage, creation of DVDs, that kind of stuff.
Excellent. Wow. So you cover a broad range of different fields.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting, from the technical side of it all the way to skincare. That's interesting. So your title, you are an infrastructure architect. If you could define for us what an infrastructure architect is and what is it that you do on a day-to-day basis?
Well, yeah, as you say, my title is Global Infrastructure Architect. That really just means I'm a computer geek. I get to sit back and kind of dream, particularly in regards to how our system work. Interoperate with the futures, what might be coming down the pike in the next year, 3 years, and 5 years, and how we can modify our network system and applications to take advantage of those technology advancements coming.
Excellent, excellent. So you get to play around with the new technologies and do all of that nice evaluation to see if you want to implement, right?
That is exactly it, yep.
Yeah, that's a dream job, like you said, for computer geeks, being able to play around with all of that. So, excellent. Good deal. So, your company recently completed a migration from Novell NetWare and GroupWise over to Windows Server 2003 and Exchange 2003, plus some other technologies. I believe you did this in about a six-month period, correct?
That is correct, yep.
Okay. What were the challenges that you were facing with the previous platforms that you were using that caused you to look for other solutions?
Well, we are in over 40 different countries. We have really just one office here in the U.S. and then bunches of offices all over the place. The problem we were experiencing, particularly with GroupWise, is their lack of internationality, really, when it came to the client and language issues that we were hitting up against. And in regards to the server, particularly with time zones and some of their guidelines around how many users they can support on one server and how many post offices you can have on that one server, particularly around the time zone difference. That was a big hurdle for us. We found ourselves just needing a whole lot of actual physical servers to handle these users in all these different countries. And we found ourselves with a problem in communicating, particularly across those language boundaries. I'd say all said and done, that's probably our, those are probably our biggest concerns that we had going into this project.
So a matter of scalability on the physical machines that you had, and was there administrative overhead that was there that factored into this as well?
Well, certainly, yeah. I mean, you know how it goes. When the more servers you have, the more time it takes to actually, you know, get through them and actually administrate them correctly.
Okay. So out of curiosity, how many servers did you start out with on the previous solution, were you able to consolidate some of that? How many did you end up with?
Yeah, we went from, it was about 45 group-wide servers that we had to maintain, and we went down to about 9 Exchange boxes.
Wow, 45 to 9. That is a pretty significant savings from the hardware perspective, and not to mention just from the overhead of the administrative side of it. I know there are certain admins that they don't mind administering a whole bunch of servers, but you know, in my case, the fewer servers I have to actually touch, the happier I'm going to be about it.
Absolutely.
Right. So I also understand that you set up some test lab environments to kind of simulate a day in the life of an employee, and you tested solutions out from different vendors like Red Hat Linux and Novell SUSE Linux, as well as the Microsoft solutions, and the nice thing about it is you didn't just listen to a sales and marketing pitch. You actually tested these solutions out in a lab environment. So to simulate this day in the life of an employee, what kind of testing did you do?
Well, yeah, so really going into this whole project, we were concerned, hey, what kind of experience is our Joe Schmo user going to have on these different platforms? So what we did is we looked at client issues, particularly around the language, like I said, that was kind of a big concern for us. We looked at, hey, what does the client feel like? You know, just doing the day-to-day stuff, scheduling, calendaring, you know, just replying to emails, that sort of a thing. And what was there, not only from an end user, just kind of feel perspective, but also we looked at the technology behind it. And we said, okay, particularly around the presence information that we get from Microsoft Live Communication Server. We're also looking at some of that integration, what sort of pieces were available with Red Hat and SUSE and Microsoft, and we kind of scorecarded them all together to really get an idea of this end-user experience. Well, aside from the end-user, we also looked at it from an administrative standpoint. We said, okay, what kind of tools are out there for our administrators to help ease their task? And what was that task? What did it mean to have the Red Hat servers in here providing all of that infrastructure, all of that, the servers the end user usually touches kind of a thing? So it's file and print and email and presence, and the list goes on and on. So taking it from that standpoint with the administrator in mind, we also scorecarded that. Then we got those together, looked at the numbers we came up with each of those three different platforms, and that's how we chose Microsoft.
Excellent. Now, did you test this at different levels of employees, like from data entry to sales to marketing to
Absolutely. Of course, you know, here from the IT perspective, we have a very different reality, if you will, than does an administrative assistant. So we had exactly that. We had help desk there. We had IT there. We had administrative assistants. We had executives. The whole gamut there. And we got them to scorecard their perceptions on what they felt. You know, how did the client react? What sort of experience did they get out of it? And kind of took that subjective grading of theirs and had them put them quantitatively in our scorecard.
Excellent. So did you actually have the people, the individual role holders, like actual executives, actual salespeople, involved in this testing as well?
Absolutely, yes.
So they were able to provide the direct feedback on how the changes that you were looking to put in place were going to affect their day-to-day activities.
Yeah, that's correct. Like I said, they were the ones who were actually sitting there performing these functions as if it was a regular day for them. And they were the ones who scorecarded it, and we took all of those, consolidated them all, and aggregated them all into our big scorecard.
Very nice, very nice. So here's the $64,000 question. Why did you choose Microsoft solutions over the other solutions that you tested?
Well, it goes right across the board. When we look at the administrative side of things, it seemed that our administrators were more comfortable with the tools that were provided out of box from Microsoft as well as third parties. We look at the end user perspective and look at their overall subjective score of, hey, how did it feel while I was in doing my daily task? But then the real key that came to us was the integration possibilities with the Microsoft solution. When we look at the Active Directory that's running behind the scenes, when we look at the Outlook client and all of the Microsoft-provided as well as third-party-provided utilities that we could throw into Outlook, for instance, Live Communication Server, the presence information, we popped right onto it, so that as I'm typing an email, I can see the presence information of the person I am sending it to, and I can decide then, oh, you know what, he's at his desk, let me just call him instead. It was that kind of integration that I think, despite the fact that the admin scorecard yielded Microsoft as the winner and the client, it really came down to that integration that was just so mind-bogglingly different. Pardon me. Microsoft just beat the pants off the others.
Oh, that's nice to hear. Nice to hear. So you had mentioned earlier you're a global company, so this presence information is actually very important to you, right?
Absolutely. You know, we're dealing with all of these different time zones all around the globe, and so very much. If I'm writing an email and I can see that contact in China is actually there, it's a whole lot easier a lot of times, as you know, to pick up the phone and get it resolved correctly as opposed to kind of fumbling through the email.
Absolutely. So we've talked about for file and print, you went with Windows 2003, and for your email and other types of communications, you went with Exchange. Have you integrated anything else in with Exchange? Are you using any kind of voice over IP systems or fax gateways or anything like that?
We have a fax gateway installed with our Exchange currently, and quite frankly, we're waiting for the 2007 and the whole unified messaging piece. We will very likely attach that as soon as it comes out.
Okay, excellent. What other technologies or solutions from Microsoft did you use to address some of the challenges that you have?
Well, we also have a SharePoint portal server installed so that, particularly in regards to doing, you know, the meeting workspaces, that kind of thing that you can schedule through Outlook and Exchange, particularly in regards to some of these projects that are going international. So it's not just people here at our campus in Utah, but it's all over the globe. And the ability to then communicate with that SharePoint is really quite compelling. The benefits we get out of that, particularly in regards to new project turnaround or you know, lower completion dates, that kind of thing. So it's just a very good, very compelling for us.
Excellent. So you just mentioned something. Your offices are in Utah, which is traditionally that's the home of Novell.
I'm sure. Now, shame on me for saying that. I realize that we really are a stone's throw away from the Novell campus.
Yeah. So I can imagine there was a fair amount of pressure to try and stick with the existing solution, if at all possible. But as you mentioned, it turns out that the Microsoft solution that you came up with just seemed to impact your business enough to make the change.
Well, you know, there was, even internally, some not a whole lot, mind you. I was surprised at how little problem and difficulty we had selling this, if you will, to our execs and others. Now, at the time, our CIO was an ex-Novell employee, and he was the one I expected the most heartburn from. But quite frankly, he just looked at it and said, you know what? I think the writing's on the wall here. It's very obvious that Microsoft's the winner, and it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah, getting the execs to sign off, that's always a key factor in all of it.
Right.
Yeah. So we've already talked about you spent about 6 months on this migration. You've reduced a significant amount of the administrative overhead, the pain points from the end user's perspectives across the board, from the executive level all the way down to your data entry level, and then the collaborative things for doing your global collaboration. One of the pain points that I understand that you had was the amount of downtime that you were suffering, in particular with your email solution.
Yeah.
You implemented Exchange. So how has that impacted your day-to-day activities by implementing that Exchange?
Let me take it from a little bit different perspective here.
Okay.
Before we made the switch, walking through the halls, the comments that were made to me were along the lines of, hey, my email's down again. How long is it going to take to get it back up this time? Or particularly with the language barrier, hey, we still haven't resolved that issue. I thought you guys were having the Novell engineers come in to fix it. Those were the kind of comments that I would receive walking down the hall or waiting in the, you know, in line for the elevator. After our migration, the comments changed to, I guess I would put it, the severity of their comments changed. So they were just little teeny nitpicky questions about, hey, how do I do this in Outlook? I was used to doing this in GroupWise. How do I do it now in Outlook? It were those kinds of questions. Nothing has ever been said to me in the hall as I'm walking down the hall or waiting for the elevator of, hey, my Microsoft Outlook is down. When is it going to be fixed? There have been zero comments like that. Rather, they're just a little nitpicky, hey, how do I do this or that in Outlook?
So it went from, you know, hey, how come I can't get to my mail to how can I do this with the new mail system?
That's exactly correct.
Okay, cool.
That means the world to me. Because I'm happy to talk to them about little functionality pieces, tweaks or tips and tricks in their client. That's nothing as opposed to, yeah, I know the mail server's down again. There's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah. And that's what the real job should be anyway, is you know, working through the day-to-day how to do this issues as opposed to, you know, fighting to get this server back up, restoring it from tape, you know, or, you know, resolving a downtime issue. So it's good to hear that. Very good to hear.
And in fact, one of the comments from our executive, after the switch, this is exactly 1 week after our switch here at corporate to all of the new email and everything's up and going, where I'm expecting to really kind of get hit for whatever, you know, mm-hmm. they didn't like about the new system or anything. And the executive's comment to me was, it was a non-event. And I tell you, greater praise could not have been bestowed to say, you know what, it just totally hasn't. Zero outage, zero problem, everything just went. It was just like a regular day to him. That was fantastic for me to hear.
Nice. So I assume also with a global organization, you have a lot of remote connectivity that has to go on.
Yes, you're absolutely correct.
What do you primarily connect to? Are you having to make VPN connections? Are you having to access email?
It's all over the board. You know, we have some major WAN links between some of our offices, and we have even some very small WAN links between some of these offices. We have employees who are doing their VPN to get in and get stuff, and I guess I look at the GroupWise days and the problems we had, particularly when it came to the mobile devices and, mm-hmm. and doing that, and the client. That sat out there, and then I contrast that with the whole RPC over HTTP and what we get out of the box with Exchange, and it's amazing the difference. You know, my exec, another one of my execs, as we're setting it up, is on his desktop, and he's entering stuff in, and we're setting up his mobile device, and he's seeing it all come syncing, you know, live right across, the push technology coming to his device and everything. He just had the biggest grin on his face, and there was no stopping that. He was just grinning, saying, this is amazing that we had this kind of technology and this connectivity now, particularly in regards to our being global and the time zone differences, because there are a lot of issues that happen in foreign markets that a lot of times we just have to wait till the next day to get in and figure out, or we have to pull out our laptop and VPN in and then finally get connectivity and get that information. But now he's got it on his device, whether he's waiting in the airport for a plane or whether he's at home, he's got that information there, and it's much more timely.
Right. So access anytime, anywhere, pretty much is what it comes down to.
Yep.
Yeah, and just for the benefit of the audience, Reed had mentioned RPC over HTTP, and that's a technology that we use with our Outlook client and our Exchange Server product that allows you to use the actual Outlook, full Outlook desktop client through the Internet without having to establish a VPN connection. We tunnel the RPC packet information that's normally used to converse between the Outlook client and the Exchange Server on the local network. We actually bundle that up inside of web-based HTTP packets, secure that with SSL, and then send that across the Internet backbone to the servers, and we don't have to establish a VPN. And it's a tremendously efficient piece of technology, especially for those of us that are road warriors that have to establish those connections. And if you're accustomed to having to do a VPN to use your full Outlook client, that's now a thing of the past with this RPC over HTTP technology. So it's good to see that being implemented. All right, so we're coming to the end of this. What I'd like to ask you now at this point is, of all of the things that you've implemented, you know, you've done SharePoint, Live Communication Server, Windows Server, Exchange Server, ISA Server, what is the favorite feature or the favorite result that you had coming out of this migration that you liked the most?
For me, I would say it's this whole Outlook Anywhere idea. This ability to, like you say, have my laptop and not worry about a VPN connection, but get all my Outlook data right in there, or have my device or my executive while he's traveling to have that information right there at his fingertips. That is the key for me. Now, that's just me. I'm a techno geek, and so maybe I'm a little more leaning towards that kind of a solution. I think that others in the corporation will come back and say, no, I really like the presence information the best. Just tie into Live Communication Server so that as I'm typing an email, I can see what sort of status or presence information these people have, and then tying that particularly into the SharePoint so that I have my little, I'm doing a project, and I've got my project workspace on SharePoint, and
right,
all of that information, that presence information, still is right there on the side. But as I'm typing a document for that project, I can see, oh, I need to ask Joe a question. I can pop a question out to him and grab it back real quick. I think that's a big key to a lot of the users.
Yeah, I can see it, again, with being a global company, having access to where or how people are available, whether they're online or offline in meetings or not, and being able to get that real quick check to see if someone is available to ask a real quick question, or if you're going to have to fire off an email to them to get a response back on that. I can certainly see where that's a big benefit for your company. All right. Well, thank you very much, Reed, for taking the time to speak with us today. Joy to have you back again at some point, but I'd like to thank you at this point for taking time out of your day. This is Chris Avis with Microsoft Across America and TechNet Radio. We look forward to seeing you on another cast. Anything you want to wrap up with here, Reed?
Well, Chris, I just say it's a pleasure speaking with you, and I would be happy to come back.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Reed. You have a great day.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Reed Wilson and Chris Avis on TechNet Radio. As I was saying earlier, we actually received an email from a listener, George Olney. He's a Networks and Infrastructure Manager for UDEX, the global leader in product data quality, and he's responsible for network services support and database administration. Here's a bit of what he had to say in his email. I'm not sure about geeking out, but I do find the TechNet Radio broadcast really useful and informative. Having listened to the Kimberly Tripp interviews about SQL, I have found it has given me a real insight into what the product offers. Overall, TechNet Radio has given me a good understanding of what's happening with Microsoft products in a format which is suitable for it to gain my attention. We were so thrilled to get this great feedback that we decided to bring George on the air to speak with him, and we also got Kimberly Tripp on the line, so they got a chance to chat a bit about database mirroring and replication. So here I am with George Olney and Kimberly Tripp on TechNet Radio.
So hi, George. Thanks so much for talking with us today. We definitely appreciate your feedback. So thanks again for taking time out of your day to join us.
Thanks very much for inviting me today.
So one of the reasons that we wanted to get you on the call was just to hear your feedback directly from you in person. And so you were saying that TechNet Radio is good for you because you have a long commute, so you listen to it in the car.
Yeah, that's right. It takes me about an hour each day to get to work. So I tried to get these podcasts onto a USB key, and I've got a gizmo in the car that plays these through a spare radio channel. So it really gives me that uninterrupted time in the mornings and in the evenings back to consume this information because, it also replaces having to read countless white papers, manuals, magazine articles because that's just dead time normally.
That's awesome. So one reason, since you enjoyed Kimberly Tripp's interviews in particular, we thought it would be fun if you spoke directly to her. So let's see if we can get her on the line for you.
Great.
Hello, this is Kimberly.
Hi, Kimberly. This is Aurora from TechNet Radio.
Hey, Aurora. How are you?
Good. How are you doing today?
Good. Thanks.
So we have a listener, George, on the line with us, and he wrote in some great feedback on how much he enjoyed your interviews. So we thought maybe he could speak directly to you. Is that all right?
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Oh, great. So, George, are you there with us?
I am. Hi, Kimberly.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Yeah, great, thanks. Listen, I was really excited to listen to some of those podcasts that you did about SQL 2005. And one thing, there seem to be so many great new features in it, particularly now with the database mirroring in Service Pack 1. I was wondering what you think is the best technology that's come out of SQL 2005.
Well, yeah, George, this is great to chat with you. I'm glad that you really enjoyed the podcast. It was a heck of a lot of fun recording them, and we kind of went all over the map with different types of topics and technologies and features, and database mirroring is definitely one of the key features that shipped with SP1. It's been fun and exciting to watch what customers are doing with database mirroring and how they're implementing it. But as far as my favorite features or set of features, I'd say they're probably the online operations. Do you know anything about some of the online operations?
No, I don't.
Okay, so the whole concept is keeping your database more available. And of course, database mirroring is good for that. But the online operations kind of span a variety of different technologies that even through maintenance or regular operational processes, you can keep your data more online and more available because there's an online form or version of the operation. For example, index rebuild. And don't even get me started on indexes because performance tuning is one of my favorite topics. But index rebuilds are something that's really important for helping keep your data and tables defragmented. And in SQL 2000, an index rebuild is a completely offline operation. Yet in SQL 2005, there is the ability to do an online index operation. It's only in the Enterprise Edition. And there are some criteria that might make it, impossible to use. But most of the time, and I'd say the large majority of time, you should be able to rebuild an index online, which means you can now do your maintenance off hours. You don't really want to do this at 10 o'clock on a Monday morning, but if you have to, you could. But it's going to basically allow you 24/7 operations, and at lower times of activity, you can rebuild with less of an impact to the system. So it's great.
Yeah, sounds like good news. I mean, we're the most excited about database mirroring, particularly asynchronous database mirroring.
Oh, right on.
That's a really interesting technology for us to get into here. We're also interested in what you were saying about peer-to-peer replication, as we're a site that has traditionally used merge replication.
Oh, right. Okay, so peer-to-peer instead of merge. Are you doing anything with conflict resolvers with
yes,
merge?
Yes, we are, yes.
Okay, so how are you doing that? Are you writing your own custom resolvers?
No, it's just the automatic conflict resolution within merge replication.
Okay, do you have a lot of conflicts?
We have one or two, but not regularly, but not that's causing us any real issues, so to speak.
Okay. Well, the one thing that is kind of interesting is merge replication allows disconnected autonomous users to make modifications that are later merged. I mean, you know this because you use this.
Yes.
But peer-to-peer, just so you know, is really meant more for very well partitioned and segmented, you know, peers to not have conflicts but send their changes across. And the reason why I'm saying that, and I probably didn't do a very good job right there explaining that, but the reason I'm saying that is that there is no conflict resolution in peer-to-peer.
Ah.
But it's very cool. I mean, I was even working on just yesterday wrapping up a new hands-on lab that we're creating for the always-on technologies. And the hands-on lab has three peer servers, and I did that by state, so Washington, California, and Oregon. You know, and if your data sets and your users are in those local regions, like Washington, California, and Oregon, and they're adding and manipulating data, and California's data is going to Washington and Oregon, and conversely, Oregon's going to Washington and California, and Washington's going to California and Oregon, the likelihood of conflicts is really low. That's where it's very appropriate to use. But if you do have the likelihood of modifications that could cross those different boundaries, I would just be a little bit cautious of that and maybe even write some application logic in to check for that kind of thing.
Slightly re-architect before we implement.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Okay.
No, that's cool. Hey, and you said you're interested in database mirroring, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Have you done anything with it yet?
No, we haven't. We haven't at all, and we've recently upgraded a lot of our hardware on the existing 2000 platform, and now is the time for, I think we'll be looking to implement in about 12 months. So now it's really an information gathering exercise for us. And as I say, there may be a need to re-architect some of our applications. So at the moment, it purely is information gathering to see how it all fits together.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so there are a couple of white papers that have come out recently and a couple of TechNet webcasts that I did. It was really a ramp-up to Tech Ed. I did a 10-part series. Actually,
yes.
11-part. Did you see that?
I've started listening to it, yes.
Okay. So there were two sessions that we focused on database mirroring, and Mark Wistrom, who was the program manager for database mirroring all the way up until it shipped for SP1, he did a session where he talked about some of the performance considerations and things to be aware of when choosing, you know, hardware, network, your bandwidth, latency, all sorts of stuff. So I'd strongly suggest that you check out the webcast, and then my blog entries, which I tied to the webcast, I have links to the white papers, and you know, like I said, there's some great resources out there for things to consider. So I'd be really anxious to hear how it goes for you. What's your distance between your principal and mirror?
Oh, about 12 miles.
Oh, right. Okay. So your latency, depending on what you're, are you? You know, dark
it's still
fiber.
Over the internet. It's still over internet. BPM,
it's internet.
So,
okay.
Yeah,
so then I'm very interested. Yeah, I'd love to hear how that goes. And, maybe we should. Hey, Aurora. Maybe we should do an update in a year and see how George is doing.
That's a great idea.
Well, Kimberly, listen. Thanks very much for taking my call today. I found, I found your talks really interesting, and I found that you speak in English, which is really useful. And although it says geeking out at the top of the TechNet radio broadcast, then you don't need to be a genius to understand where we're going on SQL 2005.
Oh, right on, George. You know, it's funny that you say that, but I have to tell you a joke. My partner is English, and I kind of joke every now and then that someday I hope we speak a common language. there's so many things that you know, we use as different words, but I you know, technology, I think we all have that common language.
Yes, indeed. All right, good to speak to you.
Cheers. Thanks, George.
Bye.
George Olney and Kimberly Tripp on TechNet Radio. And again, I want to thank both of them for taking time out of their busy schedules to sit down and have a chat with us at TechNet Radio. So I just want to give you some more information about some events and webcasts. There's a TechNet webcast tomorrow, Wednesday, October 18th at 9:30 a.m., and the presenter for that is Harold Wong, titled Recipient Management Policies and Permissions in Microsoft Exchange Server 2007. In this presentation, Harold will discuss the recipient management model in Microsoft Exchange Server 2007 and explain how it has changed since Exchange Server 2003. He'll also explain how Exchange Server 2007 handles resources and describe the changes to the administrative permission model. I put the link to this webcast up on our site, and you can visit Microsoft.com/webcasts for more information on this webcast or any other webcast. For all you folks down there in Silicon Valley, there's an event I wanted to let you know about. It's taking place on Monday, October 23rd from 1 to 6 p.m. in Palo Alto. It's called From Social Media to Corporate Media. It's an interactive workshop for high-tech communications professionals. This workshop is a unique hybrid of a traditional conference and an unconference, blending the best of both worlds. During the course of the afternoon, you'll hear short talks from leading social media practitioners and engage in conversations with other Silicon Valley professionals, leaving the workshop with an understanding of how your company can benefit from producing corporate media using social media tools. The URL for more information on that is socialmediaclub.com/SM2CM. And I'll put that up on our website for you as well, Microsoft.com/TN Radio. Make sure to join us next week for how Microsoft IT monitors and manages the Exchange Messaging Infrastructure as a Service. If you want to drop me a line or leave us some feedback, you can email tnradio@microsoft.com, or you can also call 877-814-6506. Thanks so much for listening. For TechNet Radio, I'm Aurora Queen.
Have comments or want to request a story idea? Call us at 1-877-814-6506.